Hey, everybody, good evening, and welcome to Friday Night Live. Oh my God, it's Friday the 13th. Let it be an unlucky night for the enemies of reason. Let them turn their tails and run like the wind-up toys of NPC anti-rationality that they are. And let's get to your questions straight up. Thank you for your tips in advance. I thank you for your tips. It could be a shirtless day. I worked out for 2 hours yesterday, so I took today off and spent some time in a hammock. Although I did do a really good show this morning and dug up an old video on heroism from 2008, I think it was, which I absolutely loved and had half forgotten about. So, all right. Let's get to your questions. Hey, Steph, what's your opinion on women on OnlyFans grossing more income in 1 year than the entire NBA? No complaints from the usual suspects on wage gaps on this one, lol. Right. So, human sexuality, and in particular, male sexuality, has grown to the white-hot supernova furnace that it has because, at least in the West, in sort of Europe as a whole, other places too, it has been constrained in the institution of marriage, right? It has been constrained within the institution of marriage. So an oven can get a lot hotter than an open fire because the open fire radiates directly into the room, whereas an oven is contained and contains the heat within it. So what's happened is a force that became strong because it was confined within a monogamous marital structure. I don't mean everyone was monogamous, but within a monogamous marital structure. That has allowed male lust to reach the sort of white-hot furnace levels that it has reached. And then we took all of that structure away. It's similar to, imagine there's a factory with like a blue-hot furnace for doing some crazy stuff. And then the walls collapse. It's like an explosion, and it sort of takes out the factory because the heat is supposed to be contained within the structure. And the heat of male lust is supposed to be contained within the structure of the pair-bonded, monogamous, socially enforced marital relationship. So what's happened is we've had a breach, we've had a breach. The entire structure that contains somewhat hysterical male sexuality. I mean, I remember, man, when those hormones hit, it was like a Mike Tyson of flesh obsession straight to the nads. Because girls went from being like, oh, does she really have to play? To like, girls, girls, girls! Girls on film. So it was really something. And it, I guess maybe the madness is starting to lift a little in my late 50s. Just a little. So. No, it was, it's wild. And we have kept, of course, because we can't just dial it down, we have kept the white-hot lust of male sexuality, and female sexuality too, but obviously I know males a little bit more, being one. And so when you look at something like OnlyFans, you have the white-hot focus of male sexuality that has been turned from pair-bonded monogamy into the kind of sexual access that was primarily previously only available to princes, kings, pashas, and Genghis Khan and his soldiers. When you think about the average exposure to sexual material that young people have these days, you see more sexual material than Casanova or the most prodigious and prolific lover could have ever seen in 10 lifetimes. I mean, this is messing with the wiring considerably. So yeah, the numbers are pretty wild. Somebody posted it here. So 2023, OnlyFans content creators made $6.6 billion, and the combined payroll of the 2023-2024 NBA combined payroll was $4.9 billion. So $6.6 billion versus $4.9 billion. So I guess it's a lot of ball work. Changes the equation. You know the general pattern in society, right? So the general pattern in society, and this is why there's progressivism and conservatism left and right for a variety of reasons to do with male and female personality structures, but also because, thank you, JP, and thank you, Grime Time. Hey, it reminds me of an Alan Parsons song. So what happens is a solution gets put in place because there's a massive problem. And then the solution is in place for just enough generations that people no longer really remember about the problem. And then they say, well, what the heck is this solution for? It doesn't make any sense. Why would we have this solution? I mean, the problem isn't around. Let's just, right? So monogamy was put in place to solve the problem of war. Right, I don't know if you know this, but monogamy in general was put in place to solve the problem of war and to solve the problem of revolution. So when in the past, the most successful males got all the girls, then the men who were kept out of that equation, the men who did not have any chance of reproduction, generally had to be enslaved or they would rise up and kill those in charge. Or drive them out, or whatever it was, right? Because the genes are like, well, if we're going to die a genetic death, we might as well take the risk and try and get access to women. So when there was a harem and there just weren't women around for the disenfranchised men, either they became slaves, or, thank you, Jay, or they had a revolution. And now, of course, what you could do as the ruler, as the sort of the pasha, is you could take those men without women, and you could assemble them into an army, and they'd say, well, if you want to have women, you got to go and conquer said territory over there. You can have their women. But then, of course, other people were coming into your area as well. So monogamy, if I could only do cardio or weightlifting, I would choose weightlifting. I don't like cardio, but I do like weightlifting. So a monogamy was like, okay, we are going to not just allow the most successful males to have 50 women or 10 women or 5 women, right? Depends on how successful you are. We're going to parcel the women out to everyone as a whole. And that way, we don't need slaves because people are happy to work for their own families. And we don't have this constant churning of revolutionary muttering in society. So that is generally, let's just fix the camera here a smidge. Oh my. Doesn't that bother everyone? Is it just me? Little thing on the roof there. I can't manhandle this camera too much because I've got it plugged in because the battery would overheat. So I've got it plugged in. And if I touch it wrong, the plug comes out because it's kind of got a loose connection. Things you don't care about, but I wish to inform you anyway. Come on, man. It can't all just be about you. Your recent uploads have been amazing. Excited for your new novel. I thank you. I appreciate that. As am I. I like taking on a new challenge. And this one is a real challenge and a half. So, all right. So, what's happened, of course, is there is an inverse of the successful male with many females, and now there are successful females with many males, right? So instead of the men being the spoke of the wheel and the women, like the men being the hub of the wheel, the women are the spokes, it's the other way around. And women can now get money from men without risking nearly as much, you know, stalking. And I know it does happen to some degree, but women can now flash their flesh and get money. And men have chosen giving money to digital, quote, perfection in return for having a lovely mid to call their own and have an actual family. So monogamy has broken. Monogamy has cracked. And of course, a lot of people who come to the West are young single males, and they don't have any particular marital prospects. And so that is a destabilizing factor, to put it mildly. So, yeah, the pattern is, well, we've solved this, we've got this problem, we put this structure in place, it solved the problem, and then after a while people say, well, the structure is just old and useless, we don't need it anymore. We don't need it anymore. So they get rid of it. And then the problem comes back and people are like really surprised, really surprised, right? Well, we haven't seen a mouse around here in forever. We don't need these stinky mouse traps. And then you get rid of all the stinky mouse traps and then the mice come and eat all of your crop, right? So yeah, it's all just about the relearning. It's all just about the relearning. And people are going to just end up having to learn the hard way. But at least with the documentation we've got going on at the moment, we won't have to do it again. This is the last time we'll have to learn all of these stupid-ass lessons. You know, there's a big push for war at the moment against a nuclear-armed power. Little fucking frightening. Little fucking frightening. And people are like, huh, well, every time people want free shit from the government runs up massive deficits and unfunded liabilities, and then the only way it can save its ass is to go to war. Maybe we should stop wanting to free shit, because that way we'll stop having these fucking wars all the time. Like, that's the story of the devil. The devil gives you free stuff and then steals your soul. The government gives you free stuff and then starts a fucking war. Well, it's all documented and clear, and I've been warning about it for 40 years, so. People don't want to listen. They don't want to listen. So you get what you get when you don't listen. So the transfer of wealth from men to women has been with the express purpose of having babies, right? I mentioned this on the show this morning, like, we have, as men, you know, this size, this strength, this great analytical engine of intelligence. We have energy, focus, dedication. We have all of this great stuff. Why? Because we need to produce about 10 times more than we need to survive in order to have a wife and kids, right? So we are designed to be these coked up Celsius fuel Dre workhorses of infinite productivity so that we can hand over most of our shit to wives and kids. Nothing wrong with that. It's just the way that it is. Gee, men seem to be kind of aggressive. Yes, that's right. Because we have to produce 10 times what we need for our own survival, for the sake of keeping women and kids safe, protected, alive. But now, we transfer massive amounts of money from men to women without the concomitant request to produce the next generation. No, not so much anymore. That's not a thing we do anymore. We just shovel money at women. Voluntarily and coercively, we shovel money at women without requiring any children in return. And the women, a lot of them, are like, yeah, that's a pretty good deal because, you know, having a lot of money is fun. Travel is fun. Being sexy is fun. Bagel and latte in Paris. Well, maybe not Paris anymore. Someplace, Warsaw is fun. Bali is fun. Swimsuits are fun. Lattes and cupcakes are fun. Babies and monogamy and breastfeeding is not quite as much fun. So thanks very much. We'll just take the money without giving the babies. And if you don't like that, you just want to use women as birth horses, as brood mares. And it's like, okay, so men can be used as workhorses, but women can't. Don't have to have kids. Okay. Good deal, everybody. Well done. Thank you, Chris. Good deal. Well done, everybody. Quick question. Quick question, if you don't mind. How much do you think it costs for elder care. Yes, I know. Some people, some of you out there, might look at my giant shiny chrome dome and say, elder care? I just donated to Free Domain. How much is elder care? To put an older person, who's obviously having difficulties, to put an older person in a home, how much is that per month? Full-time care in a home. How much is that per month? Just out of curiosity. How much do you think that is? $9,000 a month on average in the U.S.? Right. $9,000 a month. You just read about it? Gotta be pretty pricey. Yep. It is quite pricey. $500K. What, in Zimbabwe dollars? Well, maybe it will be the case. $9,000 per month, yeah. All right. It is $20,000 a month, but according to some reports, you can negotiate it down to $13,000 a month. It is quite something. If you want, let's see. Sis, I've learned a lot helping my family get my dad into hospice. One of the biggest realizations I've had is that our country is facing a geriatric financial time bomb. It is absolutely insane how much elder care costs. For my family, if we would have someone 24/7, it's $450,000 a year. And I don't believe that's true. I think that just seems too high. That just seems too high. Somebody says, we are paying $16,000 a month in California for my 94-year-old mom for a skilled nursing facility. I pay $2,500 a month for my husband in Canada. I just got a bill for $4,000 for a wheelchair. It never ends. No one ever talks about this. It hits like a brick wall. Somebody says, after our mother's savings ran out, a year in 24-hour home care costs, we were forced to put her into a nursing home where she spent her time waiting to die. It's heartbreaking. Crazy. Crazy. So, people are like, well, I don't really need to have children. Because why? Why don't you need to have children? What are children for? I mean, they're great pleasure and fun, and it's nice to pay forward the delight and joy of living, and you get to create. People are like, human beings have created AI. I don't know why I did that in a fairly cool voice. Human beings have created AI. It's a miracle. It's like, you know, you can do that just by screwing, right? You can create not AI, but I. You can create intelligence by having sex. It's fun and productive. So, one of the reasons you have kids, I mean, particularly as a woman, is, you know, all of that attention you get when you're young, it's gone in your 40s. And then you end up getting attention from guys who are in their 60s or 70s. And then you end up doing that, riding the Nazgul to get the house stuff. You have children. And you love your children, and you bond with your children, and you're good to your children, in the hope that, and I think it's quite possible for a lot of people, that when you get your old wrinkled ass unable to go up the stairs, somebody's going to be there who gives a shit. You ever had that glimpse? You ever had that glimpse? It's a wild thing, man. You ever have that glimpse? Where you get a really sudden, freaky sense of how little the average person cares about you when you get older. you know, someone, you live in an apartment building, someone moves in, I don't know, they're like 50 or 60, they move in, down the hall, a couple of doors down, and you don't care. I mean, they get up, they go to work, you say hi to them when you're getting your mail. Maybe they're a little desperate, maybe they're a little clingy, maybe they're a little lonely. But you got your life. You got your friends, you got your family, you got your career, you got your hobbies, you got your sports, you got your stuff. Nobody cares. Man, you got to find those people who give a shit about you and grapple them to your heart with iron hoops of infinite steel. You got to hang up, find those people who care about you that you can care about and hang on to them like grim fucking death. Because in this chilly, wintry indifference of the vast majority of the planet who don't give a rat's ass whether you live or die, you got to find those people and just hang on to them. If you're lucky enough to find someone who cares about you, you know, to use the cliche, you're ride or die people. Okay, let me ask you this, right? Let's speak frankly now because the hour is getting fucking late. How many people do you have in your life who would do just about anything for you? How many people do you have in your life who you would do just about anything for, and who would do just about anything for you? Yeah, doctors don't really care. Somebody says, F, yeah, I had that sense very viscerally when fighting for my life in a hospital bed. Yeah, who cares about you? Who cares about me? You've got 2, 0 people you could just say, I need you to get into this car. It's an emergency. I can't explain. It's going to be dangerous. And they're like, I'm in. How many people do you have who really, really, really care about you and would go march into hell itself with you should that be necessary? A disaster happens and they are by your side. You're being attacked. They got your back. You're being ground down. They lift you up. You're down. They come and talk. How many people do you have who are your tribe, your people? It's an important question, you know. Because let me tell you a big secret about life that we've kind of lost. You're going to need people. You're going to need people. As you age, as you creak out, you are going to need people. You know, you need people so you don't go mad. You need people because isolation and loneliness causes, to some degree, according to some reports, brain decay. As does hearing loss, apparently, but you need people to take care of you, to give you comfort, to give you conversation, to receive your wisdom so you don't hoard it and take it with you to the grave. Like Howard Hughes with all of his useless billions. How many people? How many people? So this is on the receiving end. How many people are your ride and die? For how many people are you there ride and die? Tell me the last time a friend was in desperate need and you dropped everything and spent a considerable amount of time helping that person out. Friend, family, someone was in desperate need and you spent a rather massive amount of time and resources helping that person out. I did a true crime, which was the Turpins, T-U-R-P-I-N-S, the Turpins family, And I read the sister of the criminal who abused these 13 children. Her sister, the father got dementia, and she lived there for 2 years. I think maybe even a little more. 2 to 3 years she lived there. Barely got any sleep. And took care of him as his brain died, long before his body died. You can be as independent as you want when you're young. But I'm telling you, friends, you're really going to need people when you get older. I'm of the age now where I see this with a depth of horrifying intimacy that feels almost like a nightmare that's hard to awaken from. Just how much older people need people. And it's a long-ass time from 40 to 85 or 50 to 85. It's a long-ass time, man, to be alone, to be unwanted, to be uncared for people to be indifferent to you. You know, like those chilling stories that come out of Japan, you know, where some old woman who's 178 or something like that dies in her little apartment. Nobody notices until there's a smell some days or weeks later. And there's a whole professional cleanup crew that goes into these places and bags and tags the person. They find some contact information. They call some kid who's far away in the world, some daughter, some son, and they say, hey, mother died. What do you want me to do with her stuff? And they're like, I don't know, just donate it, throw it out, I don't care. Swan says, my landlady is single in her 40s. She's a lovely person, but her life is my nightmare. Yeah, you know, when I worked in Thunder Bay. Spelt Thunder Bay, pronounced Thunder Bay. I had this little apartment I lived when I was in town, in from the bush. And I remember coming home from work one evening. So we would go out in the bush and we would get all of the giant 80-pound sacks of earth that we sort of dug up with drill bits and stuff from the bottom of the, right above the granite. The gold is heavy. It sifts down over time. So it's right above the granite. You're looking for the gold traces. And we'd be out in the bush and we would get the big sacks of earth. And then we would use these various machines. And actually at the end, it was just swirling and all of that to try and find the gold. See if there was any indicators of extra gold. So we'd be out in the bush, and then we worked in a sort of an empty factory, just me and like two or three other people sometimes, and we would just be swirling and chatting, doing our gold panning. And I came home from work, and there was this half-skeletor-style woman, long dead now, of course, looked like that rather skull-faced, scary female at the beginning of Blair Witch Project. And I was coming in, and she kind of lurched in a gin-soaked, drunken Oompa Loompa weave out of her apartment and grabbed under my forearm and wanted to talk, just really, really wanted to talk. And I mean, I'm sometimes ridiculously soft-hearted, strength and a weakness, I suppose, but she pulled me into her little apartment, which had that, she was probably in her, maybe she was 70, and it had that linseed oil and rubbing alcohol and dusty hard candy on the table kind of stench to it. And it was full of pictures and curios. And it was her wedding anniversary. And she desperately, with a hunger I don't really experience loneliness, but with a hunger that I can't quite understand, she pulled me in. She emphatically insisted that I sit down. And she got me some sherry. I don't really drink, and I don't really like sherry, but again, ridiculously soft-hearted. Obviously, she was as miserable as human beings can be. And it was her wedding anniversary. And she sat me down, and she asked me if I wanted anything to eat, but you know, if it's a really skinny old woman in a bit of a Boo Radley, I mean, it wasn't a hoarder or anything, but it was really cluttered. And I'm like, no, I'm good. I don't want any food older than I am. And she sat me down. Oh, I've got to tell you about... And I realized, of course, it was her wedding anniversary and her husband had died some years before. And she pulled out her photo album and she just, again, smoking and drinking and telling me all about, and you know when you see drinkers who are really skinny, you just know they're not eating because there's a lot of sugar and alcohol, you just know they're not eating. And she just wanted to show me all the pictures, and this is so-and-so, and I don't know any of these people. And that void and that hunger that you'll just grab some 19-year-old kid who's finally back from the bush and wants to go out to shake his ass at a bar and meet some girls. And he's going to come in and just grab. And I remember like pincers, like a praying man just hooking onto my arm. And you got to see the, and just the stories and the people. And I'm like, holy crap, this is a desperate situation. And she said, and we never had children. Remember that, just scalding in my brain. And we never had children. Not we couldn't have children, we never had children. And she probably had another 10 to 15 years to go, 70 to 80, maybe 85. She didn't smoke menthols, right? What's they say about menthols in hospitals, that if you smoke, we'll probably see you here, but if you smoke menthols, we'll definitely see you here in ER. And you see some souls, even if they brush up against you and they have their arms digging into your, they have their fingernails digging into your arm, they are a million miles away. They're a million miles away. Something you have to eye strain through a telescope to catch even a slight flickering glimpse of. They are so lost from humanity. So lonely that all the attention in the world can't fill up that void. And then, for the rest of the time that I lived in Thunder Bay, I had to do the Harlem Shuffle, the shuck and jive, the go sideways, get up the stairs, creep in, get my mail at 2 a.m. when she was, and sometimes you'd hear the Victrola and the smell the smoke from under the door. Because, you know, when you get old, you don't sleep that much. It's a long fucking day to be lonely. It's a long day to be lost in regret and memories and have nobody who particularly cares whether you're there or not. You can choose not to have kids, but kids are the best guarantee, particularly for women when you get old, that there's going to be anybody who cares about you at all. Your friends are going to die and move away. People on average change their friend base about every 7 years. It was like an animated smoky skeleton hung only on the puppet strings of endless regret. And it was a terrifying, terrifying evening. Every time I'd be like, well, stay, it's my anniversary. It's like, oh God. It just puts your heart through the horrifying postmodern juicer of sorrow. My God. Whew. Even now, I mean, it's almost 40 years ago. And who knows how long she lay in that apartment after she died. Since a friend will grow old at the same time and may therefore might face similar problems, kids are the one's best bet as far as this problem goes. Oh, yeah. When you were a bachelor, did you enjoy being alone and doing things by yourself, or were you feeling lonely? Is it typical of males to be unfazed on their own and young, and females to want connection and less happy alone? I don't really experience loneliness. I mean, obviously, I've been married 23 years and very happily too, so I don't really feel that. People have always had to compete with the enjoyment of my own company. My brain, as you can imagine, is sort of very active and curious and constantly coming up with great ideas and thoughts and so on, right? So, I mean, I remember when I used to live Don Mills and Lawrence, I used to go down, there was a, what's it called? The Daily Planet. It used to be, I don't know if it's still there, it was a restaurant at Young Leglinton. I used to go down there sometimes. I remember one night going to, they had this really nice pastry and cream cheese little dish, and I used to go down there sometimes, order that. It was real cheap, so I couldn't add that in a water, and so it came to like all of $8, and I could sort of nurse that. And I remember going down, I had this giant book of Voltaire's writings, and I remember just going down there, and I'd never felt bad about watching movies on my own, if that's what sort of has to happen. I would go to discos on my own and meet people and chat with them and talk to girls and all of that. So I don't really experience loneliness. I always have a crowd. It's quite the crowd in here. I don't really. But I don't think that, I did draw a little bit on that for the aunt in the present, although, of course, the aunt in the present is much higher class and more successful. But this was a woman, just back there in Thunder Bay 40 years ago, this was a woman who had no one. And it's wild because that is in particular a torment for women. It is in particular a torment. Men are better constituted to deal with solitude. I mean, because we have to be the long-range hunters and so on. So men are better constituted to deal with solitude. I don't think men experience loneliness as much as women. And especially, of course, for a woman, when you're young and reasonably attractive, then you just have endless amounts of attention, and particularly with the internet now. And then, you know, if you talk to older women, it's like, that just turns off like plop, from torrent to nothing. It doesn't diminish. It's just like one day you're just like, and they used to have a phrase for this to say, a woman of a certain age, which is just around menopause, a little past menopause, you know, mid, late 40s, early 50s. And it's just like, and women have written about this and talked about this and to some degree complained about this, that the excessive visibility they had where the male gaze was upon them and the men were always trying to talk to them or get their attention or give them second glances and so on, which they found annoying at times, but then when it's gone, they miss it to some degree. And it just, man, it just like that, it just turns off like that. And then suddenly you're invisible and you're an annoyance and nobody, the sales clerks don't want to come and help you and people don't even register your existence. And the best you can hope for is that people notice you enough to walk around you rather than through you because they think you're maybe some ghost or something like that. And a matriarch is deeply visible within her own family, but a single woman over 50 is invisible to society as a whole. And we know this in particular because the stories can't be shared. The stories can't be shared. Chris says, my father's mother was similar. She had three sons and then her husband suddenly died in the 60s. They didn't want to spend much time with her. She lived alone until her death around 2008. She lived a miserable, lonely life for decades. Though she didn't drink, she kept people away from her by being incredibly defensive and spiteful. Yeah, that's the reject. It's a preemptive strike. They reject other people before they reject you, right? Now, your kids could move away, in which case, move with them. And if you have a good relationship, you know, I mean, I don't know, let's say Izzy ends up living in, I don't know, Jakarta or something. Or it's like, okay, well, then my wife and I will just move to Jakarta because you just be around family and we'll be there to hopefully help provide her some help with the grandkids and all of that. So it's rough, man. And the amount of, you know, the people talk about the deferred liabilities, like close to $200 trillion of unfunded liabilities. The real unfunded liability is isolation in old age. That is the real, and it's like half of women Soon, half of women are going to be single. Half of women are going to be single. And women are so used to the conveyor belt of attention coming to them when they're young that they don't develop the skills to tunnel and burrow and elbow their way into friend groups. Sorry, just as a man, particularly me as a boy and as a man, I've moved around probably 30 or 40 times to different places over the course of my life. I remember there was one period about over 6 or 7 years, I lived in 18 different places. I remember running up the numbers once. So you just get used to elbowing. Hey, you elbow your way in. You just talk to people. You get to know people. You learn how to break into friend groups. All this kind of stuff. You just learn this stuff as a man. But because women, it's just a conveyor belt of stuff coming your way, you don't learn those skills. You don't know how to break into friend groups, right? And women used to take great joy. Maybe it came out of Christianity, but women used to take great joy in helping communities, in helping the community, in doing charity work, in visiting the old. I mean, I remember a friend of mine's mother did combat some isolation in her old age by volunteering for Meals on Wheels, which brings meals to shut-in seniors. And so she was able to battle that to some degree. But the other thing she did was she also hooked in and praying mantised her own son because she just wanted the time and the attention. And so she, oh, I'm making food. I'm making hamburger helper. Come on down. Murder, She Wrote is on. You know, all that sort of stuff, right? It's rough, man. The real unfunded liability is what's going to happen to people when they get old. The loneliness epidemic is going to be unbelievable. Women are going to go mad on a regular basis. And when women go mad, they tend to vote in a rather deranged fashion. There is going to be a great market for near infinite cope for women. And of course, you know, I roused how much ire back in my days of peak social media when I had a couple of mil followers on various platforms. But I was constantly warning women about this. Constantly warning women. Say, it's a long... Was it? I remember, because I did revisit X, because people were talking about me and the tweets. It was crazy, man. The tweets went like, I don't know, 6 million, 7 million, 5 million, or whatever it is. People just dimensioned me, and which is why it was a little tempting, truth about Kamala Harris today. But anyway, so I used to say, you know, ladies, you... Fertility mostly dries up at 40, but you're going to live to be in your 80s. What are you going to do for those long decades? Right? And I remember one woman was like, I'm going to F this person. I'm going to F that person. I'm going to F the other person. I'm going to even F that person's father and his aunt and his dog. And I'm going to F everyone except you. And it's like, oh, really? I'm going to miss out on all those diseases? Oh, dear. What a shame. I don't know, when horrific people say that they're not going to have sex with you, do they view that as something that's going to break your heart? It just seems odd to me, but people are like, you go, girl. I've heard the theory of 50% of women will soon be single. Is this because they're aging out or men are giving up? Well, I mean, it's pretty easy to take down a civilization, right? When you have centralized means of communication, of which the government schools are the most. But it's pretty easy. You just, your terms are acceptable. All you have to do is say to women that they don't need men. All you do is have to say to women, you don't need men. Men are exploiters. Like there was this woman, she was a finalist in Miss Switzerland some years ago, and she was a catwalk coach. Catwalk. Do my little turn on the catwalk. And she was murdered by her husband. I think he's confessed at this point. And he put her in a blender. And there are all of these women posting on social media about, you know, this crazy epidemic of male violence against women. And it's like, okay, can we at least admit that that's a bit of an edge case? That when a man puts a wife in a blender and purees her, that this may not be the majority of men. No, this is emblematic of all, you know. And it's like the women who family annihilate their kids, right? The family annihilators. The women who, you know, the demons told me that my kids were going to steal my kid's soul, so I put them in a car and drove them into a lake. Like, those women are very much outliers in this idea that somehow we can assume something about women's nature as a whole because of these outliers. But no, everyone just, oh my God, this epidemic of male violence, we'd rather spend time with bears than men. You just make women afraid of men, and you make women contemptuous of men, and then they won't pair bond. Yes, if you are lurking in the chat, drop a like. That would be very nice. That would be very nice. But women and men, we very much need each other, and we're very much built to work together. And anybody, you know, I saw this video, mic drop. It was this video of this guy saying, who provides more value, men or women? Women. And then he's like, oh yeah, well, who landed on the moon? Men. And who invented the light bulb? Men. And there was a couple other ones. And she's like, and who gave birth to them? Women. And it's like, oh God. It's really hard, you know, when you look at the amount of effort that it took to get to the moon, you look at the effort it took for Edison to invent the light bulb and so on. And then you say, yes, but getting semen out of a man, not the most difficult thing for women as a whole to achieve. It's not really like splitting the atom. Getting semen out of a man and then going through an autonomous process that is managed by your body, and you basically just have to sit and hang on to it. Wow. Well, I could do philosophy, or I could age and take a dump. Interesting. Giving into the temptation of the truth about Kamala Harris, I know you don't want to get into politics. It is something that would be a benefit to your community, I believe, especially in their conversations with others in their lives. You don't have to sell me on the pluses. You don't have to sell me on the pluses. I get that. I do. You could breathe air and exhale. Yes, that's right. I am a philosopher who's done a massive amount to forward the discipline of philosophy, and I can digest food.
Wow.
You know, when it gets hot, I sweat, and that pretty much is like solving Fermat's last theorem. Pretty much. Pretty much. Thank you for your tips. Of course, they are gratefully appreciated. Let us get to Razor Fist and Styx Hexenhammer are fighting about what? Pineapple on pizza? So pineapple on pizza, I obviously wanted to make my book on ethics as concise as possible, which is not my primary skill, but let's say as concise as possible. The chapter on the greatest violation of the non-aggression principle is pineapple on pizza did not make it into the final draft. Pineapple is really like coagulated satanic sweat. Really, pineapple as a fruit is ugly. It tastes as bad on the inside as trying to shove it up your ass feels from the outside. So it really is one of the nastiest foods known to man, because it is this incredible combination of sickly, treacle, cough medicine sweet with a weird sourness to it as well. It would be like if you had to consume the flesh of the person you love the most over a pentagram. It would be something like pineapple on pizza. Pizza, good. Pineapple, evil. And much like you can't moderate the two, like you don't have a little bit of arsenic as a compromise in your food. Pineapple, it doesn't just kill the taste, it makes you want to murder the entire Merriam-Webster category called fruit. So, pineapple on pizza, it's not so much pineapple on pizza, it's pineapple anywhere except being sacrificed in a giant Aztec ritual to save your taste buds. That I can do with pineapple. To shoot it with a very large howitzer would be fine, but pineapple as a whole is evil. And it overwhelms pizza and spreads its evil to the pizza to the point where the pizza, if I was faced with, I don't know, eating roadkill from 1853 or anything that had ever touched a pineapple, I would chow down on the dustiest squirrel I could find or just starve to death. It is really, there is a line, there are a few lines I will not cross, and anything that leads to pineapple is just absolutely wrong. There's really only one other food that falls into that category for me, which is, I love corn on the cob. Fantastic. Love corn on the cob. Corn in a can is like Moloch sneezed into a bucket and you have to eat it. So yeah, it is one of the few. These are the two evil foods. And of course, when I was in boarding school, there was a giant meat shortage because socialism. And we got mountains of shitty white bread and corn, which honestly, I think about it now, like 50 years, more than 50, yeah, 50 years later, 51, 52 years later, I can still feel my gorge rise at how much of that absolutely shitty, shitty canned corn I had to consume. And bread with duck butter on it, you know, that really white bread that if nutrition were swarthy, it is albino bread. Castrated bread, my mother used to call it, because my mother would have this pumpernickel bread. Do you ever have that? Pumpernickel bread, which is similar to the hat thrown by that weird guy in the Bond movie that decapitates people. So a pumpernickel bread is something that is developed and was developed technically to seal up massive fissures in an ocean-going vessel and should be used for no other purpose. Decapitating people or sealing up. I mean, if they'd had a couple more Germans with sandwiches, well, maybe the people who oppose the Federal Reserve would have survived the Titanic voyage. But yeah, that is a... My mother was like, well, that's not real bread. Here's the real bread. I'm like, so cardboard. Indigestible cardboard. It's one of the few foods that you can see going out exactly the same as coming in. It your body cannot touch it. I mean, it's the same thing I had with the corn in a can. Odd job. Yeah, yeah. Corn in a can. It's like, it comes out like, bend over and you can take out some squirrels and get yourself some fresh roadkill, which is still preferable to pineapple. Corn on the cob with mayo and Parmesan cheese. Do you ever have that? They do that in Florida, don't they? Like, you can get this corn when you get it dipped in every unholy thing known to man. And that's fine. Raw corn on the cob, I'm fine with that. Not raw, but, you know, like, boiled a little. That's great. A little bit of salt, a little bit of butter, maybe. That's tasty, good eating. You take it off the cob and you put it in a can, and it just becomes an evil cult member designed to have your excrement come out of your nipples and armpits. I've actually only lactated evil after eating corn in a can and pineapple at the same time. I actually lactated evil. Pumpernickel bagels go well with Swiss cheese. Margarine is pretty evil as well. Right, yeah. I mean, if you could get engine grease and add sunshine Satan yellow to it, you would end up with margarine. So, yeah, that is... I mean, on the other hand, if you're out of Vaseline, I think margarine does fairly well. All right. What was the other one? Should steak be medium, rare, or well done? They both have it right / wrong. 50-50. Pineapple does not go on main courses. Pineapple goes nowhere, but in the fiery furnaces of Mount Doom. And a good steak should not be well done. Yeah, I mean, I think the only leather you should get from a cow is its skin, not turning its insides into leather by making a good steak well done. No, that's no good. I mean, you can make a steak well done if your shoes are broken and you need to walk across broken glass without damaging your toes, McCain style, but yeah, you don't do steak well done. So there was a Babylon Bee article. Study shows 100% of men barbecuing are just pushing meat around on the grill, hoping for the best. When I was a kid, I horrified my father and mother by eating fresh-cooked corn on the cob with no butter or salt, but it was good. And I wasn't greasy afterwards. Yeah, the problem I have with putting butter on corn on the cob is it really feels like you're in hot preparation for a highly illegal sexual action that is going to have you walking like John Wayne for the next 10 years of your life. So it just feels a little, I don't know, gay club preparatory in a way that is fairly unholy. Someone I know swears that pineapple on pizza goes well when balanced out by anchovies. That's right. It's the kind of person who takes both cocaine and quaaludes at the same time. Hey, they balance out. Two wrongs apparently do make a right. Yeah, anchovies. If I wanted the platonic essence of salt injected directly in my veins, well, I guess I'd get a vaccine. Yeah, I don't. The anchovies is nasty. I remember as a kid, being so hungry once that I did actually eat sardines from a can. Did you ever do that? Although it would be great to have a company that sold sardines in a can in the shape of a Japanese subway car. But yeah, sardines in a can are absolutely completely nasty because not only they foul, oily, salty, and evil, but also, they have their little skeletons in there. And of course, when I was a kid in Ireland, we would catch trout and so on. You'd learn how to clean the fish and all of that. You got to get the bones out. But not with anchovies. Small, evil, half skulls and bones, and you can eat it all because apparently it just turns you into the Jolly Green Giant. Ho, ho, ho. Tiny fish death. Anyway, let's not go on to my particular... Now, I did actually... I have to retract something. That's right, my foreskin. I have to retract something. I don't have a big enough winch, but... It was my bottom line foundational fundamentalist Old Testament hatred of Brussels sprouts. Brussels sprouts would be good slingshots to take down a giant, or they're the perfect shape to require the Heimlich maneuver for your enemies. But I did actually have good Brussels sprouts not too long ago. My daughter ordered them, and my daughter... I'm trying to think for how long, but it's been quite for quite a large number of years. She has taken great delight in feeding me foods, finding me foods, and then feeding me foods that I don't like. For instance, she will say, "Would you like a piece of apple?" And it's a it's a pear, which is sandy, a sludge, and I would actually rather get a face full of Chernobyl mud than eat a pear. So she will say that. She also has had for quite some time the goal of getting, I quite like gum. It's a good palate cleanser. And, you know, the aftertaste of just about anything is fairly foul after a while, and gum is a good palate cleanser. But my daughter has been trying for quite some years to get me to actually chew on cinnamon gum. Which cinnamon gum would make me pray for arsenic. Because it is that foul. It is cinnamon as a whole. Like, I don't know what happened. People were like, "Oh, a hint of cinnamon." No. Meep, back up the cinnamon truck. Bury everything in cinnamon. It was like the sun-dried tomato fetish of the 80s. It's like, you cannot have anything without an infinity of sun-dried tomato. Oh, my God. All right. I like those cardboard dinners from the 70s where... If you cut through to the bottom and through the cardboard and eat the cardboard, you can't even tell. Is sweet corn different from corn on the cob? Or is that what you all mean? I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm just talking about corn in a can. Purportedly, Brussels sprouts are actually less bitter in the modern day because of selective breeding than they were years ago. So there is... You know, there's a general theory. You know, everybody thinks about this at one time or another. You're sort of hiking and you see all of these... berries and stuff, and you're like, wow, you know, we had to go through a whole bunch of trial and error in order to, oh, the red berries will keep you alive, the black berries will kill you, and so we had to go, and these ones will make you see Jesus for 9,000 years. So we had to go through this whole experimentation. I'm actually fairly convinced that there was a fork in the road that my ancestors took, because at some point over our storied European history, the only food that was left to eat was Brussels sprouts. And I'm convinced that most of my ancestors said, if the only thing that I can eat is Brussels sprouts, please feed me sweet death and throw me in the ground. Joe Rogan got arsenic poisoning eating several canned sardines a day. Oh, I'm sorry, I thought he got arsenic poisoning when he confronted his own conscience. Every Swede hates cinnamon gum, I therefore chewed it on principle, but it turns out that I liked it anyway. Well, that's a random freaking sentence, isn't it? Yes, I'm sure sweet corn on the cob, I'm sure it's fine. You can add anything to corn, just don't put it in a can. That's all I'm saying. You know, there's some foods where wrapped in tin become evil. But yeah, cinnamon gum is absolutely foul. And it's the kind of foul that it takes probably 3 to 4 lifetimes combined with the massive amount of culinary exorcisms by the high priest Gordon Ramsay to scrub from your taste buds, because cinnamon gum I can taste 3 fucking days later. It tastes like the sinful guilt of mass murder, or the aftertaste of cinnamon gum. It is nasty, is what I'm saying. All right, enough verbal pyrotechnics in the pursuit of food hell. Let us get to others. All right. What are your thoughts, if any, on organized religion not paying taxes? Well, I mean, the goal of the government giving tax exemptions to organized religion is so that they have something to threaten organized religion with, should they not toe the line. So, I do not think it's right. I mean, I would like nobody to have to pay any taxes. Voluntarism is the way to go. All right. Steph, new father here. When you had your daughter, did your wife have any issue with postpartum depression? If so, how did you go about being supportive through that process? No. I think we had a bit of anxiety. Some of the first media attacks were coming around that kind of time. So there was a little of like, well, this is opening a particular landscape of hell visage portal in the world. So there was a little bit of anxiety around that. But no, we were both completely overjoyed to be parents. I mean, it was a long time coming. So we were both completely overjoyed to be parents. And there was no postpartum depression. She's like, God, you really want to fall in love with a woman, watch her be a great mom. I mean, it is really the most beautiful thing. And I got to tell you, okay, we can have a little, it's just a couple of us here, right? We can have a little secret. We can have a little secret. I don't know if it's a male thing. I don't know if it's just a me thing. But honestly, my wife's capacity for generosity is something that is so magnificent that I actually can't look at it directly. It's like an eclipse. I cannot look at it directly. She is so thoughtful. She is so kind. She is so considerate. She is so nice. You know, we sort of make jokes about it. I live in Girly World, which is like this amazing place where everything is clean and nice and beautiful, and I don't have to sniff the food before I eat it, and things are either repaired or thrown away. Like, do you know, I found this out. Actually, I just found this out today. You can actually repair screen doors, right? Because basically, to get out of my house through the back, I have to go through, you know, that very lengthy scene where they're trying to get into the mines of Moria in Fellowship of the Ring. And they have to try all of these various tricks. So when I go outside, especially if I'm carrying something, I had to sort of elbow and I'd grab. And anyway, so apparently you can get these things fixed. I wasn't aware because I spent so much time renting places when I was younger that I never fixed anything. So she is so thoughtful and she is so nice. And she keeps everybody's needs so perfectly balanced in her head. It's like those Bavarian waitresses that can carry 9,000 beer steins all at the same time. She just keeps everything. She knows everything. You know, we were watching a documentary the other day and they mentioned a date from 2015, July the something 2015. And she's like, oh yeah, that's when we were doing this. And I'm like, ah, see, this is why I don't upset you, because mine's like a steel trap. She remembers everything, everything. It's all written down. I'm sort of a free-flowing river of things going past. And she's like the Library of Alexandria, where everything gets caught, scribed, and recorded forever. I did repair screen doors as a kid for a job, but it was actually the sliding mechanism, which I didn't do. Your girlfriend is like that? It shocks you regularly? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no, she is so unbelievably thoughtful. You know, when we first got married and we lived in a fairly small condo, but it had a front bathroom and then it had a bathroom by our bedroom. And she would get up earlier than me because she's got whirlpools of interdimensional backrooms here to manage, and I don't. And she would take all of her stuff into the small bathroom and get herself ready there, even though it was much less counter space and much less convenient, because she didn't want to wake me. And I'm just like, she makes me feel, it's not her fault, and I love her desperately for it, but honestly, she makes me feel a little self-absorbed and sometimes a little selfish, just because she is just so automatically, I shouldn't say automatically, it's a virtue. She really does all of this wonderful stuff. But she just remembers everything and everyone, and it's so-and-so's birthday, and don't forget to, like, she just remembers everything and everyone, and is so immensely thoughtful, while at the same time being very, very strong and great with standards, and she's very tough when she needs to be, but my gosh, the amount that she thinks of and considers other people's thoughts and feelings makes me feel like, you know, that wobble-necked goblin in the movie of The Hobbit. Oh, I, me, me, I. Like, I feel a bit like Jabba the Hutt with Princess Leia on a chain. You know, I just feel like, I, me, me, I. But then, I, me, me, I. And she's just constantly, like, thinking about everything and everyone. And seeing that with her with kids is just, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Is your wife more based than you? Oh, definitely in some things. Yeah, for sure. I mean, she's a great combination of really hard-headed practicality along with massive amounts of sentimentality. And it's a great combo. It's a really great combo. All right, let me get to other questions and comments. We're going over to Rumble. So last week, it was mentioned why some women seem to prefer married men. The way it was described to me by women is that married men are less likely to be too clingy, become obsessed, and probably even become a stalker. A lot of single men are single for a reason. Ah, yes. Ah, yes. Men are dangerous. Men are dangerous. Men are dangerous. And it's funny, too, because feminism has done a great job of getting most husbands out of the house, most fathers out of the house. So now with almost no female teachers when kids are young, with almost all female teachers and almost all female daycare workers and a lot of fathers out of the house for a variety of reasons, you'd think that all of these problems would be getting better and better because there's no toxic masculinity around. But this is the funny thing, right? It's a funny thing. A man cannot learn how to manage his aggression from a woman. A man cannot learn how to manage his aggression from a woman, which is why things are getting wilder and wilder. All right. Agree or disagree, is the 80-20 thing real? Is that what you mean, like 80% of women are going for 20% of men? All right. Let's see here. My hot water heater broke. A shower with no hot water is cruel and unusual torture, and it's only September. What would it be like in January? You donated a free domain. Anyway, well, I appreciate that. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Remember, you get the History of Philosophy series. You get the History of Philosophy series for all donations. All donations. This month. All right. Yeah, I can't do cold stuff, man. I really can't. I remember as a kid, one of the few times it snowed in England, I stuck my hand in the snow and I'm like, well, this is really horrible. I can't wait to move to Canada against my will. But, well, I have a little stationary bike machine that I exercise on. It's in the basement, which is cold. Doesn't matter. It's Canada. It's cold. Doesn't matter if it's a nuclear shadow overhead. The basement is cold. And like, I even like, cause I don't want to get all sweaty, right, in a t-shirt. So I will do my cardio, with no shirt on. Right. And so, I have to will myself to sit back. The people who do cold showers and so on, it's pretty wild. I remember I did do the polar bear swim as a teenager with some friends. And I was like, holy crap, I really feel for the Titanic people, the people who had to jump out of the Titanic, because that's cold stuff, right? All right. Long-term care insurance is a good choice. Oh, is that right? Okay. Stefan, 10-plus year enjoyer of free domain, but only came to Rumble very recently. So for that, I apologize. Happy that you are still fighting the good fight. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Nice to see you. Don't feel bad about being away. It has allowed me to focus on some of my first loves, which is ethics, abstractions, and literature. My answer is, every time. Sorry about that. It's great to be able to enjoy your own company. Do you think that ability is more of a philosophically existentialist capacity? I think you just, if you have a good relationship with your own conscience, you really can't suffer much by being alone. If you have a good relationship with your own conscience, the people who are frightened to be alone are the people who have a bad relationship. Cold with intense wind chills is the worst. Oh, yeah. I remember, so this is real ancient history for the younger people, but back in the day, yeah, actually, there was a thing called a bank that you had to go inside. It was wild, man. Like, there was this, literally, it was a building called a bank, and you had to go inside, and it was open from, like, 10 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon, which meant if you needed any money, and closed on Fridays a lot of times, too, so if you needed any money, you had to line up for approximately 4 days to get your money at lunchtime. There was no other way. I still remember some cute girl who worked at the bank in Dunn Mills. It's so funny, eh? So, I remember when I first moved to Montreal. Montreal is cold as a witch's tit, man. It is just, I mean, Ice Planet Hoth goes to Montreal when it wants to get a body chill and poutine and secondhand smoke. And so I remember when I first moved to Montreal, I had to go to a bank to deal with some student stuff, some student loan stuff. And I remember woke up and turned on the radio. It's like, well, you don't want to leave your flesh exposed for more than 12 minutes. I like it when they get down. It's not like for a while, like 12 minutes, right? 12 minutes, you're okay. 13 minutes and you're Han Solo. I don't know why I'm doing so many sci-fi references tonight. They're all just kind of colliding in there. I love you. I know. So Chadistan. So yeah. I remember I had a poncho. I had t-shirt, a sweater, another sweater, jacket, poncho, a scarf. And, you know, you could feel your eyeballs slowly crystal over. Yeah. Coldest I ever felt was walking between two buildings at Queen's University. Yeah, I used to spend a lot of time at Queen's University. Not a bad university. I dated a woman who was an engineer there for a while when I was in my 20s. I like the cold more than I like the heat, but if my fingers get cold, my enjoyment drops hard. Well, the problem with the cold is the women. Love women. Think I've made that abundantly clear. But the problem with the cold is the women. God forbid you know somebody with Raynaud's syndrome. Because apparently, we have this thing as men. It's a bit of a medical anomaly or something like that. But we have this thing as men. I don't know the Latin phrase for it, but in English it would be referred to as circulation. So we have this thing called circulation. The blood, it moves, like it goes to your extremities, it brings warmth there, and then it comes back to the heart, gets warmed and gets oxygenated. And so we have Roman and the Gloman, gypsy style blood, it goes places. Women's blood goes to their womb and stands guard, and that's it. Fuck the fingertips, they're expendable. Toes, couldn't care less. Earlobes, I don't care. Although, what was it? I saw a sign the other day. I'm so proud. It's a woman's store. I'm so proud I can still fit into the earrings I wore in high school. But yeah, for women, it's like the circulation is like it's a giant moat to keep the womb warm. Everything else is expendable. Oh, yeah. And God forbid you spend a winter with a woman who's lost weight. I'm freezing. Constantly freezing. So I try to empathize with my wife by dressing completely retardedly for winter. That's what I do. I just dress in a completely retarded fashion for winter, so that I can sympathize with her endless bouts of cold. You know, it's a long way from her evolution as a Greek to Canada. Like, it's a long way. Don't tell me I can do it. I can't do it. I'm not doing any more exercise today. So, yeah, I've had, of course, working up north, right? I have some cold. I've had some cold. There are far more women in Sweden that want to become nurses compared to India, where they choose to become programmers if they can. Well, as more liberty accumulates to women, they choose more traditionally female occupations. Right. Coldest I've ever been driving a tractor out the air intake portal of an underground gold mine in December. My face was so cold, my teeth hurt. I assume that you were just, but you basked in your male privilege, right? I was doing some research the other day, and there was, in Canada, when the laws were passed to protect children from labor, you could not hire a girl under 14 and under, but you could hire boys 12 and under, because privilege, so much privilege. Black lung is your new privilege. So true, the women at work constantly complain about being cold unless it's uncomfortably warm for the men. Yeah. If the women are comfortable, the men are sweating balls, right? Well, I'm comfortable, but I really am not comfortable with that squishy sound every time the men sit down. I am a portable swamp of testosterone. Right. I did answer questions about postpartum depression in my show from a couple of days ago. It's the one where I was sitting on a couch rather than in the studio. So I did talk about postpartum depression. James, could you get the number for that? It was the one I did a couple of days ago, the Flash live stream. Everyone's like, please don't flash me. I like to tease. I don't like to tease. All right, give me more questions, comments, issues, challenges, problems. What do we get here? The whole angle of your philosophy, especially considering how observable it is genius. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. All right. Now I'm doing the sticks being nuanced thing. I don't know what that means. Is nuanced mean, here's my chest here? Brussels sprouts halved and fried with bacon till they're soft and a bit blackened are just heavenly. Oh yeah, and there's a nice sauce you can put on that as well. Kick-ass answer on the steak controversy. Steph, send that answer to Razor Fist and Sticks. We'll pat you on the back. He misses you. Right. All right. The more social welfare, the more the differences between the sexes become obvious. In terms of carrier choices, that is. Yeah, I think that's true. And also, I mean, one of the reasons why women keep voting for crazy policies is that birth control for a lot of women shuts down their fear processing centers considerably, so they don't experience threats. They feel safe when they're not safe. They don't have, you know, people on the right feel unease at approaching danger a lot more than people on the left. People on the left are like, well, why are you scared? There's nothing wrong. And people are like, bad things are going to happen, man. This is not good. And they look, the people who are uneasy look crazy to the people who feel no fear. You just look paranoid and anxious. Whereas the people who feel no fear look naive and incomprehensibly stupid to the people who are feeling anxiety, right? Yes, so the postpartum depression conversation I had was from the 10th of September, 2024, Flash live stream, and it is show 5638. You know, I remember doing show 192 or 173 and being like, wow, that's a lot of shows. Yeah, his show is 5638. What should I do for show 6000? It's a good question. What should I do for show 6000? I know what I should do. I should ask for donations. Oh, it's only 11 days till my birthday. You can get me an early present. You can get me an early present, freedomain.com/donate. And you get some really free tasty goodies. All right. Is there only one chance to ask a woman out in a friend group / community? Example, if I ask a woman out in a group and if it doesn't work out, the other woman won't be interested. Well, female desire is a complicated thing. What's that guy? The answer is incredibly complicated. Was that Varsha? Everything's incredibly complicated, which means you're about to hear some truly interstellar, spectacular, iridescent bullshit. But So for a lot of women, desire is social. In other words, they like, why do women go for good-looking bad boys? Because their friends will swoon over him. So for a lot of women, not all women, right? But for a lot of women, attraction is social. They don't think, am I attracted to this man? Or will he be a good husband or father to the kids? They don't think any of that. What they think is, will my friends say, he's so hot, right? Will my friends swoon over him? There's a scene in the movie with Blake Lively I just reviewed last week. It Ends With Us, where the mother is like, oh, why didn't you tell me he's so gorgeous? Like, you know, just, and women will judge a man by how they anticipate her friends will judge him. And of course, women also, they don't want to be perceived as gold diggers. So if you're an older, less attractive man and you're trying to get a younger, more attractive woman, then she doesn't want to be perceived as a gold digger. And so she may not go with you for that standpoint. Because women want the impossible combination of a young, wealthy man, right? Men hit their earning strides at the age of 45 to 55. So women want a guy who's not a criminal, usually, and is young and is wealthy. And it's like, no, that's like saying I want a woman to give me a child at 45 is like saying I want a man to be six figures at 25, right? That's not a thing, right? And if you want to get a little bit more of the End of Us review, it's one of these reviews. The show is 5626. And it's one of these shows where movies where more and more stuff keeps piling up in my head, but I don't want to make too much of a longer review. So for a woman, she is going to take you to meet her friends. And what she really, really wants is for her friends, when you get up to go to the bathroom, for her friends to turn and say, oh my God, he's so hot, right? That she wants her friends to envy her. Again, this is some shallow women. It's certainly not all women and so on, right? So that's not going to work in the long run. That's not going to work because you're going to feel cheap. You're going to feel ogled. You're going to feel like you're a piece of meat. You're going to feel that you are desired for things that aren't your responsibility, such as your height and your looks and so on, right? Now, there's a little bit of responsibility about looks, keep your weight down and, you know, good skincare routine and so on, right? But so one of the most socially orgasmic things for a lot of women is for other women to cream their armpits over her boyfriend. So hot, right? I mean, that's the thing. That's not a good foundation for a relationship at all, right? At all. So the only way to get a successful, sustained relationship, and Lord knows I've had both, the only way to get a successful, sustained relationship with a woman is if she desires you deeply, virtually from the get-go, and she doesn't care really what other people think. If she desires you deeply, almost from the get-go or from the get-go, and she doesn't really care what other people think. If she's an independent thinker who follows her own pleasures, lusts, desires, and evaluations, and she finds you attractive and appealing, obviously to some degree physically, but you know, your mind, your heart, your soul, your virtues, just as you would find her, hopefully attractive physically to some degree, but that's all going away. But her heart, her mind, her soul, her virtues, her values, that is the only thing. You cannot have a woman lust you. It's not something that happens. Women, I mean, it's just as a man, you look at a woman and you know whether you desire her or not physically. You know whether you find her sexy. You know whether you find her hot. It's the same thing with women. They look at you, they know right away whether they have any romantic interest in you. And there's all this game stuff and negging and it's all, you know, maybe that makes silly, unintelligent women fall for you briefly, but that's all just manipulation and nonsense. But female desire cannot be generated. Female desire cannot be generated. You can't chatter into finding you attractive. A women scan top to bottom, back to front, because the stakes are so high for women. So women scan top to bottom, back to front. What other women think is so persuasive for women, right? I recall you being a staunch libertarian, Steph. Do you think there is any legitimate place for economic protectionism? Well, economic protectionism, all of these things are warped by the welfare state. Right. It's the old question of how does the government save money? Well, if it fires its workers, the workers just go on unemployment, so it doesn't really save money. So if the welfare costs are very high in a society, protectionism will have people go off welfare and into jobs where at least they're generating some revenue for the government rather than being a net cost and loss to the government. So in terms of lowering deficits, protectionism in terms of it retaining jobs and keeping people off the welfare state has value. If there's no welfare state, then there would be no need or virtue or value in protectionism at all, if that makes sense. Ooh, nice to dip in. Dr. Phil has helped silly people throughout the world with simple slogans. The outside captures, the inside retains. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Any other last questions, comments, issues, challenges, problems? Don't give me your problems. He knows you know, but he's got problems. It's a great song. He Knows You Know by Marillion. All right. Well, of course, women need more social approval of their mates because women tend to work a lot more with other women to raise children. So women need a lot more social approval with their mates. But if a woman doesn't know if she finds you attractive but has to go for the validation of her friends, this is not a self-directed woman enough for you. She's not self-directed enough. She's not an independent thinker enough for you to have a lifelong relationship. You know, it is a long, long time to spend with an NPC. Life is long, man. Life is long. You know, everyone says, oh, life is so short. It's like, it's really not. Life is short if you have a great life and a good conscience. Life is long if you're unhappy, man. Life is long. I'm glad it was helpful. Glad that the answer was helpful. All right, somebody's typing. Who's typing? Do people have typing? Yes. So with a woman, if you ask a woman out in a group, it doesn't work out, the other woman won't be interested. Generally, it's not going to work. Generally, it's not going to work. Because if there's a woman who really likes you and you're compatible, but you end up asking out some other woman because she's just prettier, then you'll lose the respect of the woman you're compatible with, right? Because she won't. She'll be like, I know the reason that you're asking her out. It's just because she's pretty and sexy or whatever, right? So you'll lose the respect of that, right? What do you think of job hopping to get more pay, even if the original company was decent, but won't give a raise? Why the fuck would you have loyalty to a company? Does the company have loyalty to you? See, there used to be a deal between the Fezziwig deal, right? There used to be a deal between companies and their workers that you give us hard work and we will do our very best to keep your jobs and all of that. And then, you know, when the international sociopaths took over corporations, it was just like, yeah, we're moving to Mexico. Oh, yeah, we'll take them to China. Yeah, we'll move everything to India. Oh, yeah, we'll import cheap foreign labor. We'll do X, Y, and Z, right? They always say skilled immigrant labor, and it's like, it's not skilled. This diplomas are mostly crap. So, no, don't have loyalty to a company. I mean, unless it's someone you know and you get along well and there's a history and all of that, or it's a family company, you're part of the family or whatever, that's fine. But corporations will sell you for body parts for 6 cents on the kidney. Yeah, loyalty from employers is gone. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, in Canada, they're just importing cheap labor all over the place. They have no loyalty to the workers. So, yeah, I wouldn't worry about that too much. Yeah, if the company won't give you a raise, it's because it's being badly managed. And if you can get a better pay elsewhere, absolutely do it. In my humble opinion, yeah. I mean, obviously, you have to balance, right? If you're going to get a bad reference or something, that could be a challenge. But, I would certainly give, it might be nice to give, if you like your employer, it might be nice to give them an opportunity to match or whatever. James says, they push the whole family thing until they need to lay you off after overhiring because they got caught up in the moment. Oh, yeah. Can you imagine? some corporate executive who wants to do a merger, and the merger is going to eliminate, you know, a third of the workforce. Do you think he's going to be like, well, I could make $10 million from this merger, or I could protect everyone's jobs? And you know what he's going to do? Yeah, you know what he's going to do. Yeah, it's all a family until somebody gets a better offer, right? And then it's all gone. Gone, baby. All right. Well, I think we're done for the night. I really appreciate everyone dropping by. If you're listening to this later, freedomain.com/donate. We'd love to get your support for the show. A little low at the moment. I understand it's a lead up to an election. People are kind of distracted. Call-ins welcome, freedomain.com/call. Would love that. And yeah, we are a family ploy. Yeah. We are a family, but we'll break up the whole thing and sell body parts to China if necessary. So yeah. Can you imagine you sit down at a family dinner? I love you, auntie, but I'm afraid there's a slightly nicer auntie who's slightly younger and slightly less demanding and slightly more affectionate. So I've sold you to China and we're going to get a Chinese auntie in here. And that's what corporations are like. Family, my ass, right? You got to be kidding me. Well, kids, I'm sorry, but, you know, there's some Malaysian kids who are going to get better grades. So I've sold you to Malaysia and I'll be taking the Malaysian kids. That's how corporations treat you, like a family. You got to be kidding me, right? Corporations are soulless, brutal entities that exist solely to make the rich wealthy while exposing them to no legal risk whatsoever. If they win, they get to keep the money. If they screw everyone, they don't cost them anything, right? Yeah, swap out family members as it suits us. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, treat you like family. My God. All right. They treat you like the family, like the Manson family. All right. Thanks, everyone. Have yourself a gorgeous, beautiful, wonderful evening. I'm not sure there's going to be a show Sunday morning. I may have something that I have to get done, sadly, but I will let everyone know by tomorrow. And lots of love from up here. Thank you, everyone, for joining me tonight. I will talk to you soon, and thank you for some very enjoyable and fun topics. Bye.